Hare Krishna. Morning, dear devotees. Glory to Srila Prabhupada. We will begin today, right away. I have no announcements. Although I probably should mention that maybe, I can't remember, it was either 2 or 3 days ago, we lost a very wonderful Vaishnava, godbrother, named Rajendra Nandana Prabhu. And he lived here in Mayapur for part of the time. I knew him from San Diego when I visited there. In the late 1980s, I used to go there quite a bit, quite frequently. When I would visit Los Angeles, I would go to San Diego. And he was the temple president, I believe, at that time. And he was very... One thing about Rajendranandana Prabhu, I mean, the devotees who testified over the last several days, everybody had the same thing to say about him and more. But one of the things that everyone said was he was always so happy, laughing and very joyful to be around. And that was my experience of him even back over 30 years ago. He really relished Krishna consciousness, very dedicated servant to Srila Prabhupada, and I have no doubt, as well as others, that he's in good hands, very good hands, and certainly in the association of pure devotees. I have no doubt. So, I just wanted to mention that because it just happened just a few days ago. Externally, he had cancer. And I believe he was only notified about it just a few weeks ago that he even had it. And then it acted quite quickly from the time he was notified, and he just prepared himself, as devotees testified, and certainly his wife testified. He didn't miss a beat. As soon as he got the message, he just did everything that he did all along, which was to be happy in Krishna consciousness, and prepared himself for the ultimate. And it was certainly, I was also told that his last words was, he was chanting, his last words, he was chanting the holy name just before he departed. Can't get better than that. Devotees were there, kirtan, and he was chanting. Okay. So, we're reading from Bihad Bhagavatamrita, Volume 2, Chapter 4. Today's text, I'm sorry I missed last week. I tried to avoid that, but anyways. So we did 2 weeks ago. The last verse we did was, I believe, text 253. And today we'll begin with text 254. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Oh, I don't know. Boy, this is quite a verse. I'm not sure of the meter. I'll just try to do something spontaneously. Sungri vangada jambavat pabriti dubis tatro pavishtam sukam shimantam adurai narais cha bharatam satrugna yuktam pura Drishtva ham Raghunatham eva nitaram matva stuvam statstavai karno tena pidhaya dasya paraya vachanishidamuhu. Translation. There before me, I saw Bharat with Shatrughna, seated comfortably with monkeys like Sugriva, Angada, and Jambavan, and surrounded by many handsome men. Thinking Bharata to be Ramachandra, Lord of the Raghus, I recited prayers addressed to that Lord, but Bharata covered his ears and repeatedly forbade me to continue saying, I am only a servant. Commentary. Gopakumara greeted Bharata with prayers suitable for Lord Ramachandra. All glories to you, great king, emperor of all emperors, Sri Raghavendra, darling of Janaki. Bharata was shocked to hear such praise. He covered both ears with his hands and exclaimed, I am just his servant. Because Lord Bharata was sitting in a fabulous royal palace on a divine lion throne, attended by many principal servants of Lord Ramachandra and by other residents of Ayodhya, it was easy for Gopakumara to mistake Lord Bharata for Lord Ram. Moreover, Bharata's beauty and dress were just like Ram's, and because Bharata is a plenary portion of the personality of Godhead, his wife is a plenary portion of the goddess Lakshmi, so she appeared just like Mother Sita. And Shatrughna, who stood by Bharata's throne, looked not much different from Lakshmi. I'm going to read the next verse also. There's no commentary, but I'll just read it.
Pitastaran grainjaliman avistato nishritya vegana hanumata balat praveshito antapuram adbhutad bhutam vyalokayam tam nivaraktim prabhum. Nivarakritim prabhum. Translation. Afraid, I stood motionless with joined palms before Lord Bharata. Hanuman then quickly made me leave that place and enter the inner precincts of the city, where I saw the most amazing sight, the Supreme Lord in his form as the best of human beings. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksho Unminitam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Bukam Kuroti Vachalam Bhangum Langayati Garim Yat Kripa Tamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dhena Taranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swamin Iti Namane Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shanyavari Pastachade Satarane Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasiddhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Not much required to review from our previous class. As we've already mentioned in the last two classes, Gopakumara has been told by Narada Muni to go to Dwarka and to stop in Ayodhya on his way to Dwarka in order to, as we previously explained, to accomplish two primary objectives, which were to get the blessings of and the opportunity to serve an intimate service with Lord Ramachandra and to get blessings of Lord Ramachandra and, of course, to stimulate his attachment for association with Madan Gopal, which will naturally arise due to the place where he will be and due to his faithful chanting of his mantra. Then he left. He went. We had that also that discussion of Narada Muni telling him, don't bother and go back and get blessings from Lord Narayan. It's not necessary. After all, you're going to be in Vaikuntha anyways, and you're not leaving Vaikuntha. And if you go back and get blessings, then you might become attracted again, and you might lose the very strong initiative that you have right now to move forward. And because the Lord understood that potential, he already told me to come here and talk to you and to tell you, don't go back. He's not there anyways. He's with somebody else, and just follow Narada's direction and don't worry about my blessings. If you have Narada's blessings, you have my blessings. And therefore, Gopakumar, on that instruction, and because of his simplicity, because of his humility, he was just immediately inclined to move forward and to proceed to his next destination. As he traveled along, he saw some forest monkeys who were chanting the names of Ram. And then the last verse that we read, or the last two verses, they became very attracted. They saw his flute. And Sanatana Goswami says either they were attracted to his flute, or because they had never seen anything like that before, or they were not inclined to allow it entrance, to be allow it to enter, because flutes aren't played in this place anyways. therefore they tried to take the flute away from Gopakumar, which he had been, of course, traveling with ever since he left Mathura originally. And then the last verse, then the men came out who had behavior like the best of civilized persons, and they could not tolerate Gopakumar's bowing down to them. And then they brought Gopakumar to the boundary of the city through the main gate. I did say that at some point, I forgot to do something here. I did say at some point that I would talk about Ayodhya in Vaikuntha, but I won't speak about it yet. There's some references to it in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, basically just describing a little bit of its opulence and the gates and the gatekeepers who were there. And that's what Gopakumar encountered. Just as he encountered before entering Vaikuntha, there were many gates. He had to pass through seven gates. There were also appropriate gates to Ayodhya, and there were big walls also surrounding it, and gatekeepers. Then, as today's verse describes, he saw Bharata with Shatrughna and seated with monkeys like Sugriva, Angada, and Jambavad. He saw Bharata's features. He thought, when he saw Bharata's features, he thought it was Ramachandra. Although in Laghu Bhagavatamrita, it is explained that that Lord Ramachandra, as we know, has a complexion like greenish complexion like durva grass, and Bharata has a bluish complexion. Rupa Goswami quotes Padma Purana, and Shatrughna and Lakshman have golden complexions. So when he saw Bharata and he saw the bluish complexion, I suspect, although it's not stated here, he probably anticipated that this must be because he saw the bluish complexion when he saw Lord Narayan. So he must have anticipated that this is Ramachandra. And not only was his complexion of a similar color, but he had similar features. And as we spoke about before, a little bit, that the two incarnations of the Lord, or forms of the Lord, who are quite similar to each other, are the form of Lord of Krishna and Ramachandra, because both of those forms are human-like. You don't see four arms in Ramachandra, and Krishna in Dwarka, and of course Krishna in Goloka, two arms. And Lord, human-like pastimes, are very similar in some respects, except, as we know, and it's described, I think, in this verse we just read, the Supreme Lord in his form as the best of human beings. And, of course, there's a reason why Lord Ramachandra appeared as a human being. And I wanted to read one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a short commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, which explains a little bit about why he assumed a human-like form. Of course, I'm sure most of you know that he assumed a human-like form because of Ravana, who got a benediction from Lord Brahma that he could not be killed by any demigod, any of the gods, or any of the other higher personalities. And because Ravana considered both humans and animals to be of no consequence, irrelevant entities, he didn't even bother to ask for a benediction that he not be killed by humans. And therefore that led, for one of the reasons why Lord Ramachandra appeared as a human. And of course it was at the request of the demigods. The demigods, they understood Ravana's benediction that he got from Brahma. And because Ravana was terrorizing the universe, terrorizing saintly persons, and he was causing such a disruption, the demigods were also quite concerned about his presence. And it just so happened that King Dasarath, who was the person that Lord Ramachandra chose to accept as his father, had no issue, had no son. He was very keen on having a son, and he was very despondent because he did not have a son who could take over the responsibilities of the kingdom. And he had this last, I guess you could call it, last-ditch effort that he was trying to make by performing a great sacrifice, invited Vasishtha Rishi to come and to perform a sacrifice with the hopes that somehow they could petition Lord Vishnu, somehow, to provide him with the son. And, of course, the demigods and everyone else realized that an ordinary human son because a human son was required, an ordinary human son probably would be inadequate to deal with somebody like Ravana. So then they thought, why don't we petition Lord Vishnu to come personally? So at the time of the sacrifice that was being performed, all the demigods were invited. They all appeared at that place, and unseen by most, they all saw that Lord Brahma had come. They knew Brahma, to some degree, was responsible. and as most of the time the demigods do, they appeal to Lord Brahma. Indra began speaking to Brahma and describing the plight. Again, unseen by most who were present at the sacrifice, they had this discussion. And Indra was appealing to Brahma, maybe you can ask the Supreme Lord Vishnu, because if you ask, he might listen to you, to appear as a human. He'll take his birth as the son of Dasarath, and certainly if he comes, he will be suitable to deal with Ravana. So all this conversation was taking place, and then the Lord assured him that he would soon come, and he would bring also his expansions, his weapons. He would come as his different expansions, as his brothers. And he left. And then Brahma left. And then a messenger came, appeared at the sacrifice. And he appeared holding a golden pot. And he held the golden pot out and gave it to Dasarath and said, with this contents of this golden pot, give it to your wives, and certainly you will get the fulfillment of your desires. So this is, of course, we're talking about the appearance of Lord Ramachandra, and it's very, very important, because as we've been speaking all along in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that whenever we speak about the appearance of the Lord in this world, we have to understand the Lord has his own abode in the spiritual world. He comes to comes and displays his past times in the Ayodhya. We spoke about this last time. But he has his eternal abode in Vaikuntha also. And he has his eternal associates, some of whom accompany him when he comes to this world. So this is how, when the Lord appears, he appears in that same form, which is an eternal manifestation, eternal form existing in the spiritual world. And we spoke at many, many different references about the forms of the Lord that Narada Muni spoke about to Gopakumara, all the different forms the Lord assumes. And then all the different forms the devotees assume, because the devotees in Vaikuntha, they have similar forms as the Lord. Some of them have forearm forms. Some of them assume forms of the Lord who appears in various species. And therefore, the Lord appears as a boar, the Lord as Varaha, the Lord appears as Matsya, as a fish, the Lord appears as Kurma, as a tortoise. But the appearance of the Lord in the human form, which most closely resemble each other, are Krishna and Ramachandra, who appear in the human form. They display human-like pastimes, except Krishna's human-like pastimes are, and Ram's human-like pastimes, they differ. And we spoke about this before. Ram's human-like pastimes are described as Mayada Purushottama, where Ramachandra behaves as the ideal follower of Vedic principles. Ekapatnivrata, He accepts only one wife. He follows the Vedic principles strictly and teaches everyone else with his fatherly qualities how to become ideal citizens by his example, exemplary behavior. So, and I was just reading today that even one distinction between Ram and Krishna is that Lord Ramachandra, in his childhood pastimes, all his childhood pastimes were completely human-like. There was nothing like what Krishna did. Like, Krishna has his human-like pastimes, but he does some very wonderful things in his human-like pastimes. Like at 3 months old, he raises his foot and he knocks over a cart and he kills the Shakatasura demon, you know, simply by raising his foot as a young baby. You know, or he does so many, performs so many, as we described before, that in Krishna's pastimes in Goloka, they're predominantly madhurya, sweet, but there's some aishvarya there. But the aishvarya is mostly covered by the sweetness of his human-like pastimes, which Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes in his Raghavatma Chandrika. But in Ram's pastimes, all his childhood pastimes were completely human-like. There was no aishvarya as Krishna did in his way that he killed demons as a child. And this was in Jiva Goswami. Yeah, it was in Jiva Goswami's commentary of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam and his Lagu Vaishnava Toshini. He says that when Vishnu or avatars like Nrisimha kill demons, they display great prowess. Ram showed only human-like pastimes during his childhood. Krishna, however, shows his powers in harmony with his sweet human-like pastimes. In this way, the highest sweetness of the Lord is accomplished. So that is one of the differences between, or some of the differences between Lord Ramachandra's human-like pastimes and Krishna's human-like pastimes. Krishna also has human-like pastimes. He steals butter like a mischievous child, but he does it in an unseen way, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. it's a mystical way. and he does things, he devours a forest fire. there's some aishvarya there, but he tells his friends, as we spoke about before, close your eyes, because he didn't want to disturb them. He didn't want them to think he was devouring a forest fire. So he told them to close their eyes. And the other reason why he told them to close their eyes is because he was thinking that if they see me devour a forest fire, just imagine what they'll tell my mother. Because they already complained to my mother when I ate dirt. But what's my mother going to say when they tell all my friends tell my mother that I ate a forest fire? So Krishna told his friends to close their eyes while he devours a forest fire. So he does many wonderful things, this aishvarya that he does. But it's not prominent in Goloka. It's mostly sweetness, human-like pastimes, which are never compromised. And we've always given the example that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives, that then when Mother Jasoda sees the demigods showering flower petals on her son as he's returning from the pasturing grounds with her friends, then she doesn't stop to think, why are the demigods showering flower petals on my son? She just thinks, oh, how wonderful is my son. In other words, the concept of Krishna being her son is not in any way disrupted at all by seeing flower petals coming from the sky. So there are some differences, but in the Madhurya, or the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes, and in Ram's pastimes, I wanted to read, as I said, a verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. As we said, one of the reasons why Lord Ramachandra appeared was to deal with Ravana, although, as Prabhupada many times explains, the Lord doesn't have to appear to kill demons. He can easily do it without having to appear. And but he does to give pleasure also to his devotees, who are very happy to see him in the particular form that he appears in. But there's another reason given here in this commentary. This is 5th canto, 19th chapter, 5th verse. I'll just read the translation. The appearance of the Lord in this world as a human was not only for the purpose of killing Ravana, but to teach the human beings. Otherwise, why would the Lord, the enjoyer, who is satisfied in himself, suffer in separation from Sita? Okay. So one was killing Ravana. Commentary. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will elaborate on this. How does Ram appear in the material world? He appeared in the world with a human form, Matyavatara, not only for killing Ravana, but to teach human beings. These humans were of two types. Those who followed Dharma and the devotees. Ram appeared in order to teach Dharma by showing his nature of following Dharma. We already explained, came to teach ideal principles of an ideal king, ideal husband, ideal son, ideal father, ideal in all respects. Came to teach this ideal behavior, the principles of Dharma. So he said, those who follow Dharma and the devotees. Ram appeared in order to teach Dharma by showing his nature of following Dharma and to teach prema by showing how he was controlled by prema. Otherwise, why would the Lord, the enjoyer, the Paramatma, in his swarup, experience suffering caused by separation from Sita? A follower of Dharma would never ignore his chaste wife and would tolerate suffering because of her. To teach this, he showed suffering in himself. That is his first point. Prabhupada speaks about this also in his commentary in the 5th canto. Prabhupada says that Lord Ramachandra taught by his example all the problems that can occur if one's attached to his wife. Says that in the same commentary to this verse. What happens? All the problems that will happen. And he even demonstrated lamentation. So much lamentation. When Sita was kidnapped, he was lamenting for her absence. He would even go into the forests and he would inquire from the trees, from the rivers, and from the mountains, crying. He would appear to be suffering. Whereas, for the absence of Sita. So, what was he teaching by that? He was teaching for those two types. Those who are followers of Dharma principles, and for the devotees, he was teaching prema by showing how he was controlled by prema. And he explained, I'm only going to read a little of this. But it's a very, very good point. Because the point is that we should never think that Lord Ramachandra is in any way suffering, or Lord Ramachandra is in any way feeling separation, or what to speak of the fact that Sita was kidnapped by Ravana. That was already explained very clearly in Chaitanya Charitamrita when Lord Chaitanya visited Ramdas Vipra, and Ramdas Vipra was also very much lamenting, how did somebody like Ravana ever get his hands on Sita? And he was suffering in that way. And Lord Chaitanya found, I think it was in the Kurma Purana, he found in the Kurma Purana he was visiting a temple. And when he had previously visited Ramdas Vipra, and Ramdas Vipra expressed this lamentation to him, he saw that in the Kurma Purana it was written that actually that Ravana never took Sita. It's not possible for him to take Sita. That he actually got a Maya form, Maya Sita, and took her, and the actual Sita was taken, I think, by Agni, and was protected by Agni. And it was Agni who delivered Sita to Ramachandra when she entered into the fire to prove her chastity. So he gave his assurance to, and he even took, with the Prabhupada makes the point in the commentary, he took the permission from the pujari and asked him if it's okay to take the pages out of the Kurma Purana. And the pujari copied the pages first onto another leaf, and Lord Chaitanya took the pages because he wanted to give the full evidence to Ramdas Vipra that Ravana could never take Sita from Ram. Anyways, but there's another important point. How could he lament in separation from Sita? And this is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. These symptoms, which only have the appearance of suffering, arise from the taste of Vipra Lamba Ras, or love and separation. This Ras is the highest bliss. It would be a contradiction if suffering were present in someone who was Atmarama or self-satisfied. One should not say, if Ram is self-satisfied, how can he enjoy Sita? Sita is a part of himself since she arises from his Swarup Shakti. There's more to this, but all of these things are just simply a repeat of everything that we've already read before in Vaikuntha, about how the Lord's Swarup Shakti, his Ladini potency, is manifest as his eternal consort in Vaikuntha, and they are always eternally associating with each other. And whenever the Lord descends, he always descends with his eternal consort. And therefore, this separation that appeared to be taking place between Lord Ramachandra and Sita was simply Viparalamba Ras. That's all it was, which is defined as the highest pleasure, the highest satisfaction. So he came to teach these two principles, not only kill Ravana, to teach Dharma to those who needed to understand or to learn Dharma. And that's why we see that all the citizens of Ayodhya were perfect executors of principles of Dharma in ecstatic love. They were not simply followers of Varnashram. They were in ecstatic love, but they were perfect representatives of Dharma because that's what Lord Ramachandra was teaching everybody. And that's what Lord Ramachandra was doing when Gopakumara came into the palace. He was instructing all the citizens about Dharma and how to live as ideal citizens and teaching by his ideal example. So it's not ordinary Dharma by any means. It's It's simply the behavior of the eternal residents of Ayodhya in the spiritual world. I don't want to speak too long today. I've read a little bit, spoken a little bit, and the reason why I don't want to speak too long is because last time I gave class, I begged devotees who were attending the class to also say whatever they like to say in relationship. They don't have to speak on what I spoke about. They have, I'm sure, whatever they share, it will be well worth hearing. But if they want to speak about these verses, that's fine also. If they want to speak about Prabhupada, that's fine also. If whatever they want to speak about, however they want to share themselves, I was told that Mitrasena was going to speak, but if Mahar wishes to speak also, perfectly welcome to do also. It's an invitation, but no pressure. No pressure at all. It's not any pressure for Mitrasena. I mean, I can continue. There's more I could say, but actually, I'll be honest with you. I think the devotees will be very happy to hear from both of you. They've been listening to me for a year and a half. So, if you'll kindly speak, and I've already arranged it that your microphones are turned on, and I think you're on. And Hare Krishna.
Is it working?
It's working?
Okay, good.
Yes.
Thank you. I was just thinking I'd like to sit and talk with you. I guess this is the best we can do, but we've got all these other people watching.
Oh. Well, we could do that separately. I'll just make a Zoom call. I'll schedule a Zoom call with Dira or some other... It'll have to be some other day, maybe next week. And I mean, Yadubar and I speak, and I speak with God Brother. I speak with P.R.A. Mohan. I speak with Purushata. I speak with Keshi Hunter.
Yadubar, that'd be great.
Yeah, Yadubar and I used to regularly talk because he was regularly attending the classes for about a year. He was regularly attending, but his schedule got disrupted, and he apologized, and now he listens to the recordings instead. But he calls me still. I just spoke to him about a week ago.
I do something like this every evening with a handful of devotees, and we read Bhagavatam. And sometimes some things come up, because we're reading Prabhupada's Bhagavatam and commentary, and questions come up. And one of them that came up, I just thought of, was somebody asked, okay, everybody in Vaikuntha has four arms, but then all of the women, they only have two arms. And we're just kind of wondering if anyone's ever said anything about that.
Well, not everybody has four arms in Vaikuntha.
Uh-huh. You mentioned that.
Yeah, and in Vaikuntha, there are unlimited forms because the Lord has unlimited forms. And some of the forms which Narada Muni explains to Gopakumara, some of them have forms of brahmanas, some have forms of sages, some have forms as renunciants, some of them have forms as wives of the residents of Vaikuntha, some of them have forms as children of the residents of Vaikuntha, although in Vaikuntha there's no birth, so how do they have children? They assume forms, different forms, according to the particular need or pastime. It may not be always permanently manifest in that form. One of the descriptions that was even given in that happened to Gopakumara at the gate of Vaikuntha, is some of the residents of Vaikuntha were returning, and because they all have opulences, Because this Salokya, this Sarupya, the Samipya, they have, some of them have the same opulences of the Lord. Some of them have the same forms of the Lord. Some of them are eternal associates of the Lord. So there is one description of these associates of the Lord in Vaikuntha who appeared from wherever they were traveling. Sometimes they traveled, like the Vaikuntha Dutas, they traveled throughout all the different universes, like they did with Gopakumar to pick him up, like they did to Dhruva Maharaj to pick him up. They're always going to places, and they adopt their forearm forms to travel. They asked Gopakumar to take that form. Gopakumar wasn't interested in that form. Then they returned to Vaikuntha. He stayed at the gate, and some of them returned from a similar mission. And they took their airplanes, and the airplanes just entered right into their bodies. They assumed, because they have all the opulences at their disposal. And the airplanes just entered into their bodies. Some of them even, their associates entered into the bodies, and he went in alone. And, you know, and one thing that Narada says is that you're going to be, these are very amazing things happen, and you're going to see them, but it's very difficult to understand. And that's why Gopakumar was so overwhelmed with awe and reverence at the gate of Vaikuntha, because that's what Vaikuntha is. It's Aishvarya Gyan. And so many amazing things happen there. And one of the amazing things are there's so many different forms. Trees, birds. Narada Muni said even there are worms, snakes, boars. They're all Vaikuntha residents to create variety in Vaikuntha. Birds, they sing. Sometimes when the birds are singing, it's described in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, their singing is such beautiful songs that the birds are singing that it captivates everybody who hears those songs of the birds, and they're even more captivated by the songs of the birds than by other descriptions given in the Vedics. And they all have these different forms in Vaikuntha to serve the desire of the Lord and to provide variety for the pleasure of the Lord. Because there's no question of there being no variety. And Prabhupada even explained this in one lecture. We quoted it in one lecture. Prabhupada said, everything that we see here exists in Vaikuntha. How could it not exist in Vaikuntha? He says, how could it exist here if it doesn't exist in Vaikuntha? And Prabhupada began explaining all the different forms in one lecture, how they exist in Vaikuntha. So I don't know, that may not be a direct answer of why the wives have two arms. And, you know, but the point I'm making is even the husbands, some of them don't have four arms, they have two arms. They adopt these different forms, which are similar to the form of the Lord that they worshipped prior to entering to Vaikuntha.
Okay, that opens it up. Because that's the section we're reading from, is the Four Kumaras at the gates of Vaikuntha. And yeah, the question all the demigods are asking Brahma, why is it so dark?
Why is it so what?
The demigods ask, why is it so dark?
Dark.
And so Brahma starts telling this story, and in the course of the story, he could have just said, because, you know, he goes on a long diversion describing what Vaikuntha is like. And like you said, the birds are all singing their songs, and then there's a temporary lull when they listen to the bees buzzing the glories of the Lord.
Right.
Up, And I think it's the bees at the Tulsi flowers. We notice there are four references to Tulsi in that story so far. there's one of them, and then all of the flowers, so there's more variety. But then all the flowers, they recognize how great Tulsi is. And then when the four Kumars come, it's the fragrance of the Tulsi that seems to be the catalyst. Everything's going on around them. They see everything, but it's smelling the Tulsi. For some reason, that's what gets all the credit for their transforming. And then later on, when they're offering prayers, they mention, they said, all right, the four Kumaras say, we've cursed some innocent people. You can give us any punishment you want, but just make sure four things they said. Let our hearts and our minds always be at your lotus feet. Let our words be like tulsi leaves that are decorated by being at your lotus feet, always. So there's the fourth reference to tulsi. And then they said, let our ears always be full of hearing about you. And that's the purport where Prabhupada brings out. The ear holes are very small, but they're just as big as the sky because you can always hear more and more about Krishna. But then let me.
I missed something. It's not so clear, the microphone, but who was hearing?
Where's the microphone on this? It's a little down. All right, I'll just stick my head in here.
No, I heard most of it. I heard most of it. Yes, that's clearer. That's clearer.
What was it?
Who was hearing? Who was hearing?
Oh, the four Kumars.
Uh-huh.
Oh. They said, we'll accept any punishment so long as we have these four conditions, that we'll always think of you, we'll always have feelings for you, and our words will always describe you. And we'll be able to hear about you all the time. Did it come through that time?
Yes, clear.
Okay. Anyway, just put in.
Something else?
You were talking about Rajashekhar, was that his name?
Rajendranandan,
yeah, okay. Yeah, I saw him in Mayapur last time I was there. And I was thinking, I was talking with Karnamrita last year. And we were talking about death. And we were saying, well, we're all going to face it. But at least the best we can ask for is a happy ending. And we're all going to die. We face a lot of disappointments in life. And at least if we can shoot for a happy ending. And every night, Dira, he says, good night, sweet Krishna dreams. And I thought, okay, that's something to aspire to talk about Krishna all day long so that it is actually possible. And, have you had a Krishna dream recently? I haven't.
Not recently.
Yeah. That would be something to aspire to. Prabhupada, one time he was talking about when you're busy serving Krishna all day long, and at night when you're sleeping, he was talking about 24 hours engagement in serving Krishna. And he said that just like at night, you're dreaming that you're out distributing back to Godhead magazines, which is something that Prabhupada did do in his own life. So at least we can dream of doing service. I've had dreams like that, but a dream of Krishna, that would be something that's quite
true. It can happen. It can certainly happen. It does happen. And to aspire for it is certainly a wonderful aspiration. And I suppose that Dira probably thinks that way because I believe that when he had his issue that put him in the hospital, it happened during the night, didn't it, Dira? Huh? Your microphone is not picking you up. There, you got to get closer to the microphone. I'm not sure. I have to say something. I'm convinced Prabhupada makes the rounds. Mahara, would you like to say something?
Well, I wasn't prepared to speak, but I do want to say that I'm grateful for your association, and I appreciate how you always take special care of the Prabhupada disciples. I know you take good care of all your disciples and students, but you are so kind to all of us, and I've noticed that about you over the years, and yeah, I just appreciate your association.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. We just had Kripa Nidhi with us for our last two festivals here also.
He was ecstatic. We watched it.
Oh, you watched it. You watched it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just sent me a message today thanking me and says he's definitely going to come again. He was very happy.
Good.
Very happy to come. I sent him a message actually thanking him for coming. I was with Kripa Nidhi in the late 80s. When I was the GBC of Montreal, he was the temple president. Of course, we didn't have a GBC temple president relationship. It was just friends. Just friends. And it was nice. It was nice. We always had a friendly relationship. And he was there for some time. I can't remember how long it was, but so I had the opportunity to spend time with him then. I think it was in 19... maybe 88...
88. We went up there. So we were in Montreal also at that time. He was in Montreal. And we went up with you, actually.
Oh, with
the GBC Palace.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I drove me up there a couple of times.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, because Kalindi and the Avaroni were in Montreal.
I forgot. Well, that's not where we were going. We were going to the
but no, but I forgot that they were there too.
Yeah. But we were there. What did they call you? The gopis? They were serving Radha Manohar every morning, freezing cold. The Caribbean girls from Bayan, freezing out there, serve Radha Manohar. It was a nice time. It was a small temple, but it was a good rapport with the nice folks. And we would help try to iron up whatever problems were there out there. So it was nice. Yeah, Krupa, I think, went to become the president of Delhi maybe 85, 86, sometime like that.
Uh-huh. And then he went to Sharanagati.
Yeah, after that.
Anything else, Mitrasena Prabhu, you'd like to share about your readings?
You were visiting us in Harappa Village many years ago, and you talked about being in charge of Russia and overseeing all of these temples. Is it where you go? As soon as you get there, when I got this problem and this problem and this problem, and you said, okay, we'll deal with that in a couple of weeks. But first, and then you made a motion of opening up the temple. And I just poured it on everybody. Then all the problems go away.
I think that's
really good strategy. I've tried to use that. People come to me with problems. Okay, just a minute. Let's read this. We're reading this and we're trying to make it better. We just read for a while, and then a lot of the problems do just go away. It really does work.
It works.
And I see you're always collecting more ammunition. You're just studying more and more, and then you just pass it along.
You're sharing it is where all the nectar's at.
Yes.
It's
a pipeline. I was talking. Sachinandan called him, and I told him, I listen to your recording. I share what you say to other people, and he said, we are all just like a pipeline. Comes in on this side, we pass it out on that side. And what do you use for recycled or repurposed? I just take all of these things and I recycle them. I steal everything. None of them are my own inventions.
But that's what makes it bona fide. Better we steal it from Prabhupada.
Well, yeah, we take it, but then Prabhupada also says, early on in the first tempo, when he's introducing Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages, and Nanishuranya, he says that the speaker has to repeat everything in disciplined succession. But he also has to hold the interest of the audience. And he says, this takes realization. Not just to repeat it, but apparently to adjust it so the audience can understand it. And you have to understand it yourself in order to be able to tweak it, adjust it. And then his final thing, this takes realization. So,
yeah.
That's the program.
When the realization is there, it becomes sweeter.
Yeah.
That was also Prabhupada talks about that in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. The Shukadeva Goswami is just like the parrot who has the quality of biting into the fruit, and when he bites into the fruit, then it makes the fruit even sweeter and more relishable. So.
And Prabhupada, in our reading group, we've been really appreciating Prabhupada's writing and biting into the fruit. Every opportunity he gets to bash the Maya values. It's funny, he'll take any excuse. It'll be something that's got nothing to do with them. He'll bring it in. Like, oh, here he goes again. and we're seeing the first canto. It's like, wow, this is just right. Confidence that I put everything into that first volume of the first canto. And then, whatever Janmashtami, we decided let's read his translation of the 10th canto up until the end of chapter 13. And in there, his writing just got even more sweet. And then we all watched that video of him reciting in the last days, or translating, just lying on bed, and just like hardly any breath at all. He hardly moves his mouth at all. Everything is acting, moving under the supreme direction of Krishna. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So we all watched that. And then when we got to that purport, which is chapter 13, text 53, and it's a very technical purport. The verse is technical. Brahma sees how time, swabhava, our nature, gunas, five different things. They're all working, and they're all glorifying these Vishnu forms. And Prabhupada goes into a long technical description of all of these things. What time is, guna, swabhava. He ties it all, and it's like, in the middle of that, and we read that sentence, everything is acting, moving under the supreme direction, and you realize how much work he put in at the end of his life to do this. And when those books were coming out, it was like, wow, these purports are getting better and better. And we also noted the difference in his purports toward the end. And early on, he's talking about there's a need for Krishna talk all over the world, like the revolution verse. So these books will create a revolution in people's hearts. There's a need for doing this. Then toward the end in the 10th canto, like every third or fourth verse, he's saying the Krishna consciousness movement is creating a revolution. Krishna consciousness movement is spreading this all over the world. Religionists, scientists, people in general, leaders should take this movement seriously and help us. That's really interesting. Like 11, 12 years later, it's like, I've got this going, take it seriously, I'm about to leave. It's not holding any words back. Yeah, and like he said in one of those conversation, this old man just sitting here, still beating this drum.
Hey,
if anyone wants to join the reading group, look me up on Facebook.
Are you reading from the 10th canto, 13th chapter right now, or are you reading from the 3rd canto?
No, we did that leading up. Then on Prabhupada's appearance day, we read the Lilamrita, and I said, let's read about what was going on in Prabhupada's life while he talked to that. So we started reading in January 1977, which was when he started translating the 10th canto in Bhubaneswar. And we read all the way up to the end of his life. And so some of these are brand new people that never heard the story, and everybody was emotionally
Yeah, so we've been all the way up to the end of that. Okay, we finished that up. Now let's finish up reading up to the end of chapter 13. So, having read about the deprogrammers and what was going on in Prabhupada's life, then you read those purports from Prabhupada's talking about the deprogrammers and the court case. He brings that up. Yeah, really, really interesting.
It's also that purport Prabhupada talks about one having to protect Krishna. And he's saying, protecting the Krishna consciousness movement. He gives that as an example of it, like protecting, when Mother Jasoda was concerned about protecting her son. And he said, in the same way, we have to protect Krishna's presence in the Krishna consciousness movement. Something like that, isn't there?
Yeah. Or what's that about her protecting the milk? You have to take care of the services.
No, that's a different one. That's a different one. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's so many. And having read the two things side by side, yeah, this is strong understanding. Yeah, we can go through this thousands of times. We just read that last night in a purport. Travis said, you can read the Bhagavatam and the Bhagavad-gita thousands of times and still get new life. Said, okay, you guys hear that? That's what we're going to do. We're going to go through this thousands of times. So we spend an hour and a half every night. We have a pretty good chunk done. And yeah, that's what we do. That's the job description. Read and discuss Bhagavatam.
And chant Hare Krishna.
That's it.
Do you ever hear the story that Guru Gauranga Prabhu told about his experience with Prabhupada in Geneva?
Guru Gauranga. No.
I'll tell you. It's a nice story. I think you'll like it. Because Prabhupada said the exact same thing that you just said. This is what we do. Guru Gauranga had invited some important person to come and meet Prabhupada in Geneva. He was inviting all these important people because he invited Prabhupada to Switzerland. And before Prabhupada's arrival, he was going around and kind of soliciting all these different people, important diplomats and professors. So he wanted to get this one particular person to come. And finally, after some pushing, he convinced them to come when Prabhupada would come. So the time came when Prabhupada visited. And then this person, I can't remember who his name was, what his name was, or what his position, but he was an important, influential person. And he told him, he said, when you come before the spiritual master, he said, you should ask him questions. You know, he was kind of preparing everybody. This is what you do. Please come with questions. So this person came. Guru Gauranga invited him to the room. Prabhupada was sitting behind the desk. The gentleman sat down, and then so Prabhupada said, do you have any questions? And the gentleman said, no. And Guru Gauranga was describing how devastated he was. You know, he was really crestfallen, you know, like he worked so hard to get this person to come, and then he comes, sits in front of Prabhupada, and Prabhupada asks him, do you have any questions? He said, no. So then Prabhupada turned to Guru Gauranga and said, give me the harmonium. So Guru Gauranga brought the harmonium. And Prabhupada just started playing and chanting and a kirtan, just himself, chanting Hare Krishna for like about 15, 20 minutes. And the man was just sitting there. And he was just watching Prabhupada, and Guru Gauranga was just, of course, completely... He was watching Prabhupada, thinking how Prabhupada in the spiritual world, his mind was just totally absorbed in the kirtan. And finally he opened his eyes and he stopped and he said to the man, he said, this is what we do. And that was it. And then he turned to Guru Gauranga and said, give him prasadam. So I was thinking by this story that no questions asked, all answers given.
It might have been a relief for that guy who has to just talk all the time. Maybe kind of wanted that. That's one thing you never know when hurting someone. For Krishna, I've been preaching with devotees. So many times the devotee will start saying something or doing something and say, oh no, please don't do that. But then it ends up being just with that person. And especially with Prabhupada, maybe that's just what that guy needed, just to have a moment.
Just what now? Okay. What was the last thing?
Just to have a moment.
A moment. Yeah, love a mantra.
He doesn't know what it is. Yeah, I like this. That is the devotee. Yeah.
I just thought. I've completely forgot. I have a Dhammadharasikam starts in about 12 minutes. And it's usually online and it's on this channel. And I forgot that now that we're an hour later that it starts in 12 minutes. And I think the devotees have to get everything together. They have to get the internet together and the channel and the camera, so I have to end. But
good to see you and to see everybody else. Devotees keep going.
I mean,
see everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. We want to see everybody. Really want to see you. Really want to be with you.
I think so. So well, looking forward to see you next week. Maybe you could, I don't know if you'd like to speak again next week. And I'll leave it completely open. No pressure. No pressure. But it completely open. I know you have a lot to share. And unfortunately, this is not a good medium for kirtan. I know how much you like to lead kirtans, but it just doesn't work so well. But maybe that'll happen again someday soon. I'll be able to come take part.
Yes. Someday. Sometime.
Thank you. So we'll end here. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Siddhi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Praise the Srila Prabhupada.